Welcome to the People Stack podcast, where we discuss the intersection of people, work, and technology. I'm your host, Jen Bunk, founder of Jen Bunk Ventures and architect of the People Stack. My guest for this episode is Christian McCarrick. He is SVP of Platform Engineering at GTL. Welcome, Christian.
Thank you, Jen. Pleasure to be on the show this afternoon.
I am excited to talk. So let's jump right in and find out first a little bit about what you do. What does it mean to you to be SVP of Platform Engineering at GTL? And what role do you play within the larger organization?
Sure. Well, that's a good question because I'm still trying to figure it out.
Okay.
I think we all are. So just a little bit of history. Our company, GTL, we acquired the company I was at, Telmate, back in August. So there were about 200 to 300 people in Telmate. We got bought by GTL, which had about 1,000 people. So now we're kind of combined around 1,300. And at Telmate, I was the sort of VP engineering, did a lot of that role. Some of the CTO role was on the executive team here. And now it's an interesting role going into, you know, a larger company, which I think is a whole other set of conversations we can have about the challenges and tribulations and joy of sort of being acquired by another company. Mm-hmm. But during this interim period, I'm still remaining as sort of the VPA of Telmate of the engineering side. I call that my day job. And then my night job is now managing what would be inside of the larger company, all of their production engineering, their platform engineering, their technical operations, everything security related, sort of DevOps, monitoring, everything that sort of relates onto the kind of that keeping the lights on and the systems running over there. And, you know, it's always been interesting because we're trying to merge a lot of the different technologies we're doing here at Telmate into, you know, the larger organization at GTL. And GTL has grown a lot by acquisition. So I think we're sort of like the ninth company they bought. So there's also lots of interesting challenges ahead as we try to assimilate not only our company that was purchased, but some of the companies that were purchased prior to us, both from people and process and technology. And my real job that's going forward inside of GTL is really trying to lead that effort of consolidating most of the technologies and processes we have so that we can kind of take the best of breed that's out there, yet still keep the lights on, keep the things running. It's that old old saying, right? Replace the engine when the car is running type of thing. So trying to do a little bit of that.
Got it. So just so I understand, so GTL basically acquired a whole bunch of smaller companies, and that included the company that you used to work for, which
Correct.
Is Telmate. Got
yes.
it. But there were some other companies that were kind of, I hate to use the term gobbled up, but basically that was kind of how it was with GTL. It's now a much larger company than it was before. And so it's not
Correct.
Just a matter of GTL and what used to be Telmate kind of merging, but it's other companies that are being transitioned into this as well.
That is right.
Okay.
So it's definitely a challenge. And, you know, even personally for me, I've taken over a larger role inside of GTL as well. So my team, you know, increased by something like 40% overnight, which is, you know, difficult. Mm-hmm. I think even growing organically is challenging. But when your team grows from something like 125 people to 225 people overnight, there's lots of challenges associated with that as well.
Understood. And can you tell us a little bit about what GTL does, as a company? Is it service? Is it a product? Somewhere in between?
Sure. And so GTL as a company sort of started out similarly to how Telmate started. And what we do is we provide, GTL originally started out as providing phone services into correctional facilities in the United States. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Telmate was founded by providing not only phone service, but also education and entertainment into correctional facilities as well. So now merging the two, we're really trying to take a lot of the the services and the products that we built at Tellmate, which include sort of video visitation, sort of being almost like a WhatsApp for friends and families to be able to communicate seamlessly with their loved ones that happen to be incarcerated, as well as providing a big focus for us now is really providing education to the sort of inmates that are in correctional facilities. And you're really trying to get them, whether it's vocational training, skills training, all the way up to things like GED and beyond. We actually can get four associates and four-year college degrees through some of the program offerings that we're really trying to put out there. And there's been really good studies that really showing that if you can change the educational level by a degree of anyone that happens to be sort of incarcerated, that you really start lowering the sort of chance that they will actually end up back in the correctional system over time, right? Up to the point where if you can get someone a PhD, it's almost, you know, they'll never go back, right? If you get a master's, it's maybe 20%.
Yeah.
If you can get a college degree, it's maybe 30, high school goes down to 50. Anything beyond that, it's almost like, you know, they might go back up to 70%.
Okay.
And we really try to reduce that recidivism in the community.
Wow, that's a great mission. I love that you get to play a role within the community in terms of really treating folks who are incarcerated like people, like humans, that they made some mistakes and they're paying their time for it. But let's think about next year. Let's think about the next 2 years and let's educate them so that when you get out, you can become, you know, you can go back to the community and you can give back. So that's great. So it's so great to hear, about the mission of different companies. So I'm assuming that this is something that's kind of, that's important to you, that if you've been working there for a little while, that you kind of connect with that mission. So it kind of, you know, gets you out of bed in the morning kind of thing, because
well,
it's
it
a
is.
Really great mission.
And that's some of it why some people inside of Tellmate were excited about this acquisition, because, you know, I think that we, you know, the founder of Tellmate was always joking that, you know, if we did our jobs right, we would put ourselves out of business, right? Because we wouldn't have to offer our service anymore, because we wouldn't really have, you know, people incarcerated. But, and I think though that what's good about the acquisition is as we feel now that we were able to take what our mission was and really bring that into kind of the parent company now and be able to offer our services and the touch points that the inmates and the friends and family can have to a much greater audience, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, going from, you know, something almost 10 times the amount of inmates that we touched, now with the parent company, we can have access to that much more. And, you know, we really can hopefully be able to make a difference to a much larger population.
Yeah, that's great. And you mentioned kind of consolidating the technology and the processes. So what do you mean by the processes? Like, for example, people processes or just any of the processes that are associated with doing what you do and helping create these technologies?
I think a little bit of everything. One of the problems, not only of just having our company be acquired, but having the parent, you know, GTL, acquire a number of companies over a few years, there had become sort of different independent silos, and each team that got absorbed was maybe they were continuing to do some of the things that they had done when they were an independent company. So whether it's from interviewing process to what's the escalation process to JIRA workflows, things like that, I think we're really trying to now look across the board and make them more common so that we can be much more efficient and much more maybe industry standard. And it will help. And by doing that as well, and any company, I think, that grows, sometimes you get different teams starting to work on different things. And if you can get them to be consistent, it just becomes a lot easier for different people to jump from one team to another, because maybe the code review process is similar, your coding standards are the same, you know, your workflow, your JIRA workflows and deployment processes are the same, right? So it just becomes a lot easier and less costly to train new people, whether they're coming in from outside the organization or you want to do cross training between people on different teams and they want to move from one team to another.
Mm-hmm. And you're in the middle of that right now in terms of really figuring out how do we find this consistency? How do we find this common language, common tools, common processes so we could all get on the same page?
That's correct. And going into an environment that's really mixed, we have, I would say, half of the toolings and whatnot are sort of open source and Linux based. And then, the other half are probably on the Microsoft platforms and Oracle and some of the more, enterprise type software. So how do we find common things between them? We're not necessarily all going to switch to running on Linux versus Windows, but there are things that you can find common ground on. Like mm-hmm. you can use, Jenkins. Jenkins can be the build process both for your Linux and for your Windows environments. We mm-hmm. can look at what are we going to do from a virtualization strategy, from a container strategy. There's been a lot of, I think, advances over even the last year with things like containerization and Docker and Windows really taking an active role in trying to become a first-class citizen with, the container environment and, improving their networking support with toolings like Kubernetes and everything. So mm-hmm. it's really kind of evaluating, what are the common things we can find between all of them? And then even if we can't find a common technology, we can certainly work on, a common, product process and development process and Jira workflows, even though maybe one might be a .NET app and the other one might be, a Java app.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Cool. So let's talk, Christian, about professional development and how you approach professional development. And part of the reason that I ask that is I'm curious, but also I know we met at Calibrate. And so sure. I know that that means that you're seeking out these kinds of professional development events for engineering and engineering leadership. So besides Calibrate, how do you approach your professional development, and are there other resources that you've sought out so that you can really stay on top of your game leadership-wise?
Sure, and I think to really answer this question to start with is the philosophy that I take to it is an active one, meaning it doesn't just happen by default, because I think we're all busy, and it's not only my approach to my professional development, but I really sort of not force, but really sort of make my managers do as well, is that it has to be something that is a first-class citizen. It has to be planned for. You have to make time for it. Mm-hmm. Whatever ultimately logistically you plan on doing, if you don't sort of say this is important to me and my organization, it just won't happen, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's just the first piece. Oh, I'll get to it. I'll get to it later. I think you really just make sure it has to happen or else it won't.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I think, on the conference side, I'll list through a couple of things. The Calibrate conference, definitely an awesome one. Another one out there, Mary Williams puts on, is called the Lead Dev Conference. Mm-hmm. And, that's expanding as well. I think this year or in 2018, it will be in Austin, New York, and London. Mm-hmm. So that's another fantastic conference. In San Francisco here, there's a really great meetup that's kind of put on by someone I know called Jerry Lee from Groupon, and it's called the San Francisco Engineering Management Leadership Group. If you Google something like that, it's pretty close. Mm-hmm. And that's a really excellent group, and he brings in some great speakers, and they have some great discussion. Mm-hmm. I'm also like just a reading addict, and so I take the kind of the train in the morning, and whether it's blog articles or things like, two great publications I encourage everyone to read because they're awesome, are the Harvard Business Review mm-hmm. For sort of general sort of management and business, tactics and research, mm-hmm. and First Round Review, which tends to be a little bit more on the technology side, but those are just two magazines that I tend to read sort of, well, one's really cover to cover. The other one's a little more virtual, but, mm-hmm. everything that they put out, I definitely try to read. Mm-hmm. And I think books, too. I'm a voracious reader of books. If you go to Amazon and you search in, like, books, though, you can be completely overwhelmed, right? Oh, my gosh. Everyone, I think, has published, like, How to Manage Better book. And I think so that's something to filter out. But I think some good ones out there are I think the manager's path is very
Yeah.
specific to sort of technology leadership, a little more general, but coming out of a tech background is radical candor. I think we lead by Kim Scott, and that's a very excellent one as well. There's a couple of interesting other ones. I think managing humans. There's a few of those that are definitely good too. The books are probably few and far between. I stumbled upon this really awesome sort of TED Talk MBA. I can send you the link for it. And it's, I think, a really awesome sort of list of, I think it might be 89 TED Talks to sort of listen to that are a lot around management and self-discovery, motivation. You know, you have your Daniel Pink, all of that sort of thing. So I do a lot of watching of TED Talks as well. I think those are very, if not necessarily educational, meaning I'm going to get something out of it, there, which is another important thing, which is motivational. It's always good to be motivated to sort of be continually motivated too, because as you know, as sort of software leaders, I was doing an interview with Kate Houston recently, and she said something where, you know, management is very lonely, and it's so true. So whatever, you know, you can get things that motivate you too, I think that's very important, because it can get a little lonely.
And I think that ties back to the idea of being active and proactive and in shaping your own career, that it's e so easy to get stuck in the daily grind and the hamster wheel, and then if you don't actively carve out time and mental resources, and in the motivation helps do that. That it, like you said in the beginning, which I absolutely agree with. If you're not active in it, it's not going to happen. And so, yeah, I like to have that balance too between, okay, this thing I'm watching for particular system strategies, tactics, procedures, whatever. Learn a new approach to leadership or whatever, or knowledge and skill building versus the just more inspirational, motivational stuff. So I think that's so important too. And so the TED Talks are really great for that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there are some other things. I still do some specific training, both for myself and my teams. We've used a company that I highly recommend called Life Labs, and they do very good training for management and managers. I think it's very hands-on. It's not dry at all, and you sort of it goes into some of the behavioral science behind some things too. So I highly recommend that. And then I have a mentor as well, sort of a coach, maybe not a mentor so much, but more of sort of a coach that I, at various times in my career, rely heavier on than others. But I think that's certainly someone, again, it goes kind of go back to that lonely thing. And it's, in some cases, it's not about that person giving me specific tangible advice, but in other cases, it's just validating some of the things I'm doing. So I don't necessarily feel like I'm the weight of this decision is only on me, and I don't have anyone I can go to with it because other people might not understand. And sometimes it just makes me sleep better at night to know that, yeah, I did a I kind of ran this by somebody else, and they didn't, you know, throw up about what I was saying. So it's okay.
Yeah, and I think there's different kinds of support, and I'm glad that you brought up mentoring and coaching, because that's definitely been something that's been a huge part of my career, and I encourage folks to do that and seek that out. I mean, because sometimes it happens just by accident. We have informal mentors, but I think I like the idea again, of being more proactive with it, and that kind of support that you get, it sometimes it's instrumental, where it's here's a suggested strategy, or here's some things you can go do, some things that have worked for me in the past. But sometimes it's just emotional support. It's just, hey, I'm doing this. Can I get some validation? Or hey, this happened and it really sucked and it's really hard. And yeah, we all go through that stuff. That both are really, really important.
Absolutely.
And so while we're on the topic of mentoring and coaching, let's talk about the fact that you serve as a coach, a mentor, and a teacher. So how has that been for you, sort of sitting on the other side of it and getting to teach and coach other people? And has it opened your eyes to new leadership strategies and tactics?
I think it absolutely has. I think mentoring has really helped in a lot of ways. And you know, I mentor, obviously, well, hopefully my own teams. And then I mentor both with sort of the Everwise network more formally, and then with Plato as the mentor in their network as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that I really got into the aspect of truly mentoring, even though I've been managing for a while, once I really jumped into becoming a manager of managers, mm-hmm. where that concept of really trying to help and guide other managers to do and what they needed to do and become the best they could be, that's when I think I really started getting into trying to formally help my own team and my direct reports at that point. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's something very valuable to mentoring people outside of your day-to-day organization, mm-hmm. that really helps. Because sometimes as much as I try to avoid the making my one-on-ones about project and status and some of the tactical things, unfortunately, even though I try my best, sometimes that creeps in.
Yeah.
And being able to mentor people where we don't have that necessarily personal involvement or investment in the specific outcome of, say, a project or a release or something else that's going on, I think frees myself up a little bit to be maybe a little more open with some of the ideas, because I'm not coming in with any preconstrained notions about what may or may not work with maybe somebody's organization or with their peers. And sometimes that's good, because getting that alternative view and being able to offer that alternative view to some of the people I mentor sometimes helps them. And then also it helps me to look at my situation. Well, I just recommended doing something there. Internally, I might not have recommended that to someone on my team, and having myself retrospect, why is that? Mm-hmm. Why is that the case? And then looking here, maybe I should, and looking at the blocks that are helping me do that. Mm-hmm. And also, I think getting a different variety of people that I think really are grateful for getting mentored and sort of showing the gratitude they have for maybe helping them through a certain situation and watching them grow as well. And sometimes those mentoring sessions aren't necessarily on a day-to-day basis. So maybe it's a once a month thing. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like watching if you watch a plant grow every day, maybe you don't see it grow as much, but if you watch it on a month-to-month basis, you can sort of see more, you know, bigger milestones between them, and you can kind of see the effect that you might have and the accomplishments, you know, that they have. Mm-hmm. And certainly getting, I think, it's almost like role-playing in a sense too, because sometimes the situations that I've helped some of my, you know, mentees with, it's almost like practice, because mm-hmm. invariably at some point I haven't run into that specific situation at my company or with my experience, but that's probably going to happen. And it's almost like a dress rehearsal for when that situation happens to one of my managers or one of my direct reports or something in my organization. I'm like, hey, you know, that sounds very familiar. I did something like that. And this is what we did. And maybe I then know whether that worked or not. And then I can take that learning and also use it, you know, internal to my teams here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you touch on a lot of great points. A lot of the tangible and sometimes not so tangible benefits of being a mentor, like seeing them grow. I love the plant analogy. And that, yeah, there's some research that shows that once a month could be enough, especially if it's somebody that's outside the organization and somebody that you meet with, let's say, for an hour a month or something like that. And there's pretty clearly defined roles, and you're not there and you're not in it every day. And I love that point too about, you know, you can take these alternate viewpoints because you're not tied to that outcome, right? So you can be more open to other ideas. That's an excellent point as well.
It also gets me to realize just also, and this is something that I realized recently too, that sometimes I'm coaching people about how to deal with their bosses, right? Their managers. And I get to see a little bit of sometimes the impact of decisions that other people make on their employees. And in some cases, that's very clear, like, oh my God, I would never do that. But in other cases, I get to hear a person who would be an employee of someone else be very open with me about how that affected them in an area where I might be like, wow, you know, that's interesting. I might not have thought that that action might affect a person in this way. So it gives me that, because they're going to tell me everything, because my mentee is not going to be afraid to tell me something. So it sort of allows me to say, and also to see an effect of other managers, good or bad, and how it affects the employee that I'm mentoring, that I'm mentoring. And it allows me then to make sure that I'm more cautious about that type of interaction on my end, or I might realize that something might be very positive that someone else is doing that I hadn't thought of. And I might try to work that into, you know, my sort of routine.
Yep. That makes total sense. Yeah, that's definitely another benefit. Hey there, folks. We'll get back to the interview in two shakes of a lamb's tail. But first, are you a tech manager? Is leading your team like herding cats? Are you sick of making stuff up without trusted systems to guide you? Are your days filled with useless, time-sucking meetings? Join my Facebook group with other tech geeks who are coming together to build thriving, high-performing teams who don't need constant hand-holding. No HR BS, just real stories from real geeks who understand the nuances of being a techie. To join us, go to genbunk.com/Facebook. Without further ado, please enjoy the remainder of the interview. I have another question for you that's a little bit off the cuff, but as I was thinking through all that we've talked through so far and trying to think of, oh, if somebody was listening, what questions might they have, or how can we start to tie this together a little bit? It's essentially, how do you find the time? you're SVP of engineering. You're also very active in mentoring and teaching others, and got a lot of stuff going on inside of work and outside of work, and made the point, you got to take an active role here. So what is your approach to quote unquote time management, if you call it that?
I don't think I've solved that. I don't think anyone has, but I've taken also a very active role in time management, right? That I think if you don't take an active role in it, it just consumes you. And I use the concepts of sort of time boxing and calendar blocking very heavily, and that if it's not on my calendar, it just doesn't exist, right? I live by my calendar, and I kind of even merge a little bit some of my personal and my business calendars to make sure that happens, even to the point where I believe in sort of a little bit of the whole person. And personally for me, I know I handle stress and things much better by making sure that I get sort of exercise and physical activity, because it helps me to sort of maintain some sense of calmness and being able to approach situations. So I'll try to go to the gym at lunch too, but I put it on my calendar, right? And I sort of have to make these things sacrosanct, or they just, they get steamrolled. And I've just trained my teams here to make sure that not only myself, but everyone else should really treat their calendar as really ironclad. And it takes a lot, maybe a whole system down or something else, to really have to move somebody's schedule around. And I think there's all the other thing too, is it's very easy to feel overwhelmed. So a couple other things I do, I really do have okay, at the beginning of the day, what are the things I have to get done today? And if I can't really leave until I get these maybe three things done. And some days it's one, and some days it might be four, but anything else, I can still go home and sleep at night. You know, it might not be the best, and I'll probably have to deal with it. But there's some things that I just have to get done today, or just cascades, or there's deadlines or anything else. And then I try to, prioritize my days around that. And the other thing to that too, is I think if you have so much going on, I try to make sure that if I have competing interests, sort of I have two things that are high priority, I also try to look at, okay, what's really first, and mentally just check out from the one that is maybe due next week. But I'll make sure I put it on my calendar to find time to address it in the next week. If I have to do A today this week and B next week, sometimes if you don't do that, you'll just kind of context switch between A and B, and it totally stresses you out. But I've sort of made the thing, okay, I'm putting B out of my mind because I know that I've already allocated time for it after A is due. So I'm okay with it. So I'm just going to forget about it. Right. And I think mentally that helps me out a little bit from feeling so overwhelmed. And again, that only works if you actually put that thing in your calendar. And you can guarantee that that time will not be taken up by something else later.
Yeah, that trusted place so that your mind isn't constantly, what's going on with B? What's going on with B? Oh, no. Oh, shoot. And that's actually one of the main ideas in David Allen's Getting Things Done system. So David Allen wrote a book called Getting Things Done, something like The Art of Stress-Free Productivity. And one of his core sort of tenets and ideas is that you have a system, you have this trusted system, whether it's your calendar or your task list or some combination of them, where it's like, where it's exactly the way that you just explained it. So that you can focus and really focus on A and not worry about anything else. And that doesn't work unless you have that trusted system where you know you're going to get those reminders, where you know you're going to look once a week or whatever it is.
That's right.
Yeah, because that focus is so important.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it takes buy-in.
And it takes buy-in from the team.
Yep.
And it's easy for me in a sense where I can, since I run the organization, it's a lot easier for me to sort of manage a little bit of those things. So I think if maybe you're a middle manager or a lower manager, that might be a little harder, right? But in that case, maybe it's a discussion with your manager about why you think this is important and how you can potentially get more productivity done, you know, and those kind of things. You know, certainly goes a long way. And then the other thing I use too, which is, you know, I think a great tool in any manager's toolbox is delegation, right? I try to delegate aggressively to other people on the team, but I try to do it in a way that makes sense. It's something they're interested in, or we've been having their one-on-one conversations about career and professional development, and they'd like to maybe move up. And, you know, I kind of tie it into, well, maybe you can take this on because it ties in with you wanting to take more responsibility and proving yourself. And it's a step to showing that, you know, a promotion, whether it's to senior or lead or manager or director down the line, this is one of the things you'll have to do anyway. So let's trial it out, right? So I really try to delegate where it makes sense as much as possible.
That's great. That's great. That's a good practice for folks to get into. Think about where you're going to be next, and let's put the training wheels on. And if that's where you want to go, you're going to need to do this anyway. So let's do it together while I can give you some feedback. I love that.
That's right.
Cool. So as we're talking about people challenges, I think it's a nice time to transition to the last question. And this is the question that I ask all of my podcast
sure.
guests, and that's, what is the biggest people-related challenge in your job?
Whew. Well, I would say, I mean, that's a good point, because although I run technology, I would say the biggest challenges are always people and not the technology, right? Because, you know, the technology, although it can fail, it's probably because of some failure of properly managing a team or a project or people that caused it to fail. So I think there's a couple of things there. Biggest, especially in my role right now, it's really working on properly aligning people to make sure we're all working on common goals. And especially with an acquisition and trying to merge the two companies, really making sure that everyone of my managers and then their teams all has a common understanding of where we're trying to get to, why it's important, and sharing the best way to get there. And, you know, making sure that gets communicated down to all of the people sort of doing the work as well. So it's that combination of alignment and communication about that alignment, what they're doing, and why it's important. I think those are very important challenges. Those are very challenges, at least for me at this point in time, in my role because of, you know, specifically the acquisition and the transition that we're going through.
And it's a great environment to test some stuff out, to test some communication strategies out, and to see if the alignment is actually happening. And so what kind of this may be getting into the people communication weeds a little bit too much,
Sure.
but how do you go about communicating? So for example, is it over Slack? Is it over email? Is it, all hands meetings, other kinds of meetings? What have you found to be to work the best so far in what you're doing?
I would say all of the above. I think that in any organization, especially in an organization going through any type of transition, people get nervous, right? And over communicating is always better than under communicating. And that's sort of a philosophy that I always try to manage by. So that starts with me doing really kind of town halls and all hands meetings to my staff meetings with my direct reports, and making sure that then they're going to their staff meetings with their teams and communicating, and that they're having their one-on-ones. And the important thing for all that is really about consistency of message, right? So that everyone in the company is hearing sort of the same things from me that they're hearing from the directors, that they're hearing from the managers, and they can talk to each other so that everyone really knows that they're, hey, this is I've heard it three from in three different avenues, and it's all the same. So they that kind of builds that sense of trust and just ease that, hey, this is, hey, I keep hearing this, it's the same thing, the story's not changing, this is the direction we're going, this is how we're doing it. Different parts of the communication might have more specifics or whatnot. I might not get into the real tactics at a town hall, but the overall why and how and when might get communicated. And then more at the line level, they might get into some of the tactics about, well, this is how we're going to meet these goals, and this is the sprint planning and various things like that. But certainly all the above you mentioned, it's emails, it's video, it's, I run a very, very distributed team right now. So I really like to do as much as I can over that video type of, Zoom. We set up Zoom rooms and all of our conference rooms so that it's just you walk in and you push a button and it's just very easy. It takes away that friction to having video meetings, and then it's Slack and email. And I think all of the above is just really important to make sure that it's just the communication keeps happening and it's consistent.
And we have a little bit more time, and I want to get into one more topic that you kind of brought up. Not you didn't say it, but I think we're sort of dancing around it, and that's culture.
Sure.
Because the idea of consistency of message and aligning everybody's goals and values, especially aligning it with the overall organizational goals and values, that really gets into that shared culture. And I mean, you could talk forever and ever about culture, but I guess what I'm curious about in your context right now, because of the merger, is where I guess to you, from your leadership perspective, where would that culture come from? Is it coming from like the top down? Is that what's most important, or is it kind of bottom up, or can it happen both ways? And how are you seeing that kind of emerge right now in your current situation?
I think both ways, but culture is something that is just absolutely critical to, I think, what our success is going to be. And that culture for us is an interesting because we are merging a number of different cultures, right? We've a company, our current company, going into a larger company that has grown by acquisition, and a country that is also there's different types of culture. Nuances in our company because it is geographically separated, and you have some West Coast culture, some East Coast culture, some culture from more heavily tech-oriented companies that were acquired versus some cultures from more of a telephony sort of background. So it's challenging, and I think it's one of the larger challenges that not only myself but the other leaders in the organization are going to have to to actively manage to ensure success. And it's culture from making sure, I think, we have certain value. There's culture, and the definition of that is very broad, but part of us is really making sure that the values, especially at Telmate, or where we got acquired, really also the values of really making sure that we're doing this for the right reasons, and you know, we're looking out for the inmates and their friends and families, and that real mission permeates, you know, the entire organization, that we don't stray from it, right? So that's a very important thing for us to make sure we do. You know, and culture means different things for each company. We have to be, you know, we're a little different, so our culture is not necessarily going to be about, you know, shipping fast and furious, you know, 100 times a day, because we have we're very security conscious. We have lots of compliance restrictions. It doesn't mean we can't automate everything and make things push button and do all that awesome stuff, but we have to, there's certain processes and stuff that we have to follow, and approvals and different checkpoints, so that, you know, we'll never become a culture of, you know, fail fast and break things, whatever, like Facebook. But we're trying to have another culture of us that is, you know, really rock solid and dependability, and really doing things in a way that we can become cost conscious, so that we can keep our costs as low as possible for, you know, the populations that we serve as well.
All excellent points. And I think what you said, Christian, about the being the active role, that playing an active role, leadership playing an active role in shaping that culture, that again, that's not going to happen if they don't do that. It's not just going to happen the way that you want it to, unless you define that, unless you communicate, and unless you think about, okay, what's going to work here? Like, okay, is having a Zoom room going to work here? Okay, great. That's one of the ways we can do it, because we're so distributed. But you wouldn't come up with those kinds of things if you weren't so tied to that mission, to the, okay, we need to make sure we stay communicating and communicating in the best ways and the easiest ways. So
that's right. And we are trying to do some cultural shifts, which is, it's not going to be all a run. It's sort of at the end of it, it's going to be this amalgamation of kind of hopefully the best pieces of the different organizations and everything driving towards, you know, a common goal of what we're trying to get to. And, you know, in some cases that will evolve, but in others really have to make sure that we are steering it or making an active effort, whether it's by policy or decision and things we tolerate or not, to make sure that we stay within the kind of the guide rails of where we want to get to. And that's with hiring and people we keep on versus people we don't keep on, and new people we bring on, and all of the above.
Yes. All tricky decisions, but all critical decisions. And again, you make excellent points, Christian. And I think it's just about time to wrap up. And it's been great talking with you. Thank you so much for spending some time with me this evening.
Absolutely. No, I always enjoy having a conversation and talking about leadership and all the things that really, because they really matter to me. And I really appreciate all of the people out there that are really focusing on this and dedicating time and effort to hopefully trying to really improve it, you know, for everybody.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. So thank you for being a part of that.
Absolutely. And thank you for your time today.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.